Archaeology is sometimes defined as a science which deals with the discovery, recovery, and interpretation of the artifacts of man. And it's exciting in the world of archaeology to become involved, particularly in just such things. I think all people are interested in archaeology. Very few people would not be. So we're going to deal a little bit with the discovery and recovery of archaeological evidences for mankind, with an emphasis on documents, and to give you an idea of the nature and character of the evidence. You're going to see that a great deal of interpretation today is on a very small bit of information. For example, there was only one synagogue so far discovered preceding the time of Christ, and yet in Palestine there were hundreds of synagogues at the time. There was a synagogue also found in Dura Europa, and on the northern part of the Sea of Galilee, the floors, a mosaic of a synagogue. In the area of Greek literature, some of you may be classicists and philosophers and poets. You have no doubt studied philosophy and the classics. But do you realize that those great lyric poets, as far as we're concerned, like Kinder, Theognis, and others, that of their writings we only have 10% of the material that they ever prepared and wrote, and that most of what we now have today was recovered after 1873? From discoveries made in Egypt, stuffed in crocodile skins, came most of what we now have in the books we call the classics. There were 1,000 Greek Mycenaean cities that existed at one time. Less than 300 have been excavated, and about 40 others have been dug into just a little bit. There are 5,000 ancient city sites in Iraq alone that have been identified before 1949. Of these, only 28 have been excavated. When the great Sir Woolley of England found the city of Ur and dug there in the 1920s, he had to choose between 200 mounds. It was fortunate that he selected the one that led to one of the great treasure discoveries of all time, the King Tombs of Ur. What are those great treasure discoveries of the world? The four greatest ones, I think you're probably familiar with one or two of them. The King Tut's tomb is probably one of the greatest. I had the privilege just a few months ago of being in Egypt and going to the museum there and spending a considerable amount of time going over the details of what was discovered in King Tut's tomb. That was one of four great discoveries. Another one was the discovery of the treasures of Priam. Remember Troy and the Iliad? It was the treasures found there by the great German archaeologist Schliemann, who was actually the father of archaeology. When he dug at Troy, he excavated seven cities of this ancient area and found the treasures of Priam. The King Tombs of Ur, discovered by Sir Woolley in the 1920s, was the third greatest discovery of treasure. And the fourth greatest treasure find was found here in the Central Americas at Monte Alban, the great plaques and headpieces and breastplates of gold that were found there. Permits this treasure discoverer to be considered one of the four greatest. But at any rate, a great deal more could probably be found if they would go back and excavate what they have now identified. The great city of Memphis in Egypt, so familiar in ancient Egypt, has never yet been excavated. Only the tombs and tomb cities, and a few of these, have been selected and dug into so far. They may make great discoveries yet in Egypt in the future. I was in Egypt in September of 1980 and visited the city of Luxor, where some of those great discoveries have been made. But the cities mentioned in the Bible, like Tyre, Sidon, have not been excavated as yet. They're just ruin areas, mounds. And also in Iraq, such cities as Eridu, Ankei, Nineveh, found in these great vast desert areas, belonging to noble peoples as well as kings and rulers, were libraries. Undoubtedly there were libraries, and surely enough, today over 600,000 tablets have been excavated from just a few of the cities that have been dug into. And of these great cities in the plains of Iraq, less than 10% have yielded to the archaeologist's spade, and of the documents found of the 600,000, less than 10% have been published. So there are continually activities going on in the way of cataloging, assembling, and bringing this material to the attention of the literate public. To excavate ancient Babylon, of which we're all familiar, physically or otherwise, or the city of Nineveh, whose mound covers nearly 2,000 acres, it would take today 1,000 men shifting 120,000 tons of dirt a year to remove 14,500,000 tons of earth, and it would take 124 years to excavate the city. Well, that's probably one of the reasons why they don't dig very often, but look what they might find if they did. Well, they may get around to it someday in the future. Most of the time, archaeologists go into such a mound, it's been identified, and they dig a trench in such a manner that they're able to make an entryway into a portion of the mound from the surface to its lowest level, down to bedrock. And so most of the finds that you read about in archaeology books are from these trenches, just a little bit. They try to take the trench clear to the bottom so they get a stratigraphic level clear through the site of any ancient area they're digging into. Now, in the first 300 years of the Roman Empire, there were never less than 25 Roman legions. In each legion, there were 5,000 men. The legions were paid three times a year, so that there was at least 370,000 paydays in a year for all the legions. For the 300 years' service that these men were engaged in, there were at least 112 million vouchers of coins delivered. Of these, we have six. So we're trying to tell you that archaeologists interpret history on a very scanty bit of evidence. So much yet is to be found, and if we don't recover the past, it's been said we'll probably be condemned to repeat it over and over again. In the ancient temples of Egypt, papyri records were kept by scribes, personnel whose tasks month after month included the recordations of donations ever received, and temple activities and visitors. It required 30 feet of papyri per month just to catalog the receipts in one of the temples, 560 feet of papyri per year. There were over 100 known temples in ancient Egypt, and over 2,000-year period of time, from 2500 B.C. to 500 B.C., that they were active. The Egyptians must have used a total of about 75 million feet of papyri for just their temple records alone. We have recovered 39 feet. So when we talk today about the nature of the archaeological evidence, it's easy for you to see that this little bit is an awful lot upon which to interpret what went on in the temples of Egypt and elsewhere. When I was in Egypt in the Great Museum, I noticed other papyri records, of course, and there were dozens of feet in certain of the rooms on the walls and under glass, representing material collected over the centuries. Now, coins that were minted in great quantities for the entire realm in any country from the past, or even of countries that were occupied by such as the Roman Empire or even Egypt, we have maybe one example. They're very rare indeed, these coins. There are 116 Assyrian kings mentioned in biblical times, all of which erected for themselves at least one statue. We have found two, Shalmaneser III and Ashurbanipal II, who figured dramatically and drastically in the destruction of the 10 tribes and other aspects of Israel, 720 B.C. to 600 B.C. So if we had to depend on scriptural evidences alone to prove the historical truth of such persons as Pontius Pilate, for example, we would have had to wait until 1961 to even prove that he existed outside of the traditional records handed down over centuries. Then they found Assyria in Caesarea, an actual epigraphical documentation in stone referring to Pontius Pilate. This was the first epigraphical recovery of mention of even anyone in that period of time of Christ. In 1963, they found mention of Herod at Masada. In 1966, the first description of Felix, the procreator who followed soon after, before whom Paul was taken, to corroborate the fact that these men had even existed at all outside of the documents of the scriptures. So in any corroboration in tradition by archaeological data, it's rare. And even so, it's nevertheless tremendous. Now let's go to another aspect, the documents themselves. Among the documents that have been found, mostly within our century or just before, or sometime about the turn of the 1800th year, we find that a great deal of what has been discovered and recovered has been in the last century and a half. In 1868, the very first book was published in China. It's called the Diamond Sutra. So if someone says, hey, when was the first book ever written and reprinted? Well, you could tell them it was 1868, if you like to have such information available. In 1778, they found in Giza 50 papyrus rolls in a jar. Because of the character of archaeological preparation and recovery and maintaining and putting in a proper place and preserving was not then yet developed, of those 50 rolls, only one survives today. In 1809, many manuscripts were found in French Africa by a French abbe de Lille. In 1818, Davanti, Dervetti, and Belzoni found mummy rolls in Gurna in Egypt. From these discoveries came a number of mummies, and in the armpits of those mummies, four of which arrived in a place called Kirtland, Ohio, about 1835, the Mormons today have what they call the Pearl of Great Price. Now, if that was an authentic document and the contents thereof, then evidences should be able to be accumulated or discovered to demonstrate that it was a historical document. And that's exactly what is happening in the world today. It really took the development of archaeology in the 19th century and the century in which we have been involved and since the restoration of the gospel for archaeologists to develop the necessary techniques for the preservation and preparation of ancient documents. In 1821, a great find was made in Ethiopia by a William J. Banks. Here, or there, he obtained the 24 books of the Iliad, and a whole series of other books were found in pyramid graves and other depositories in Ethiopia. And another Ethiopian book of Enoch was found at this time. Now, there had been an earlier discovery, one found in 1773 to 1776 by an intrepid explorer. His name was Bruce, a little Scottish explorer. He liked to be in the farthest place he could ever find. Talk about being in Timbuktu. Well, he was there 200 years ago. And in the tombs in Ethiopia, he found some of the Abyssinian canon. In the canonical Ethiopian texts before the book of Job was the book of Enoch, now the subject of two tapes, tape 107 and tape 111, dealing with the books of Enoch. In 1776, he returned from Ethiopia with three copies. He gave one of the books of Enoch to the University of London and several to private institutions. Later on, in 1821, one of these in the Bodleian Library was translated by Dr. Lawrence. Today it's called the Book of Enoch, number one, or First Enoch. In 1820, we have the restoration of the gospel initiated by the great and marvelous appearance of the Father and the Son to the prophet Joseph Smith. By 1829, the Book of Mormon is being prepared and translated by Joseph Smith and Oliver Cowdery. And by 1830 to 1842, we have the contents of the Doctrine and Covenants. And by 1835 to 1842, the Pearl of Great Price. The Latter-day Saints submitted to the world documentation historically, doctrinally, of such nature and character that the LDS Church for 150 years has been, from the standpoint of dissidents and non-Mormons and anti-Mormons as well, under attack by the nature and character and the contents of those documents. Nearly all of the unique Mormon doctrine and practices and organizational aspects are now being found and confirmed in these ancient documents. In 1842, there were discoveries made in Egypt called the Kutonian documents. Very rare, very interesting. But in that interval, great things had happened between 1821 and 1842. The attention of the world from then on in was to be drawn to the volumes of Scripture of the LDS Church. If that material is authentic, there ought to be documentary evidence to demonstrate so. This is an interesting challenge to the people of the world, as well as to Latter-day Saints. Anything purporting to be ancient, either historical or otherwise, or authentic history, and put before the world is subject then to a discovery proving it false or true. and very likely with the great enormous discoveries being made recently in the last 150 years, there would be the possibility then of demonstrating authenticity of any such books put before the world. Oddly enough, there have been quite a few discoveries made from 1750 until our present day of such magnitude that upon examination by scholars, non-Mormon and otherwise, recognition that the LDS people have been stealing the thunder of ancient history and doctrines is now recognized. So any lengthy book like the Book of Mormon, 580 pages, would be subject to close scrutiny in time and verification or rejection based on what was found because of the nature and characteristic of the areas purported to have been covered by such a document. Many tapes have been prepared dealing with the evidences now supporting the Book of Mormon, including tape 82 and 90, and some future tapes that are being prepared, 116, as well as 109. In 1844, there was another intrepid explorer out of Europe. His name was Tichendorf. What a fantastic individual. Motivated by an inner impulsion that seems to obsess some of these types of explorers at different times, he was literally trying to find confirmation of the Old and New Testament, trying to get back into the early texts. His contribution was immense. The King James Version, for example, was based on texts that were no older than the 10th century. The King James Version was prepared by 52 men from about 1606 to 1611. Having finished their special commission, they had relied upon texts mostly in the hands of Jews, called the Masoretic texts, but only about 600 years old at their time. Within 30 years, other texts became available, and the King James Version was revised three times before 1640, particularly on the basis of the Codex of Alexandria, which went back to about 450 A.D. So there was a constant search for the autographs, the original, to get back to as close as possible to the originals. Well, Tichendorf was one of these individuals looking for such material. In the area of Sinai at the St. Catherine's Monastery, one that was populated from about 320 A.D., one of many monasteries that populated the surface and face of Egypt since the 3rd century, he made a discovery on beautiful white vellum. He found the monastery were literally using a beautiful Greek material to start fires. He tried to recover a wastebasket. He had little difficulty. One of the individuals took him and showed him ancient texts. He did recover enough from the wastebasket and other sources of a text that goes back to 350 A.D., Tichendorf, after several return trips to the monastery, induced the monks to give a particular text with about 8 pages missing and some other documents as a gift to his sponsor, the Tsar of Russia. This they did. They made it a gift about 1859 to the Tsar of Russia. Today we call it the Codex Sinaiticus. And the Tsar of Russia made it available to the academic world, and the King James Version was revised again several times before 1893 on the basis of now the oldest existing text of the Old and New Testament in Greek. In 1979, in the Mount Sinai Monastery where Tichendorf had been over 120 years before, they were repairing a room, and a wall fell in. In the vault behind the wall, there were 27 chests of documents, including the missing 8 pages of the Tichendorf document. Can you imagine? Now they're cataloging the material. It is loaded with documents from those centuries so close to when that individual was nailed to the cross. The fascinating possibility of what may be found and where, nobody really knows, but it's there. It is happening. Great discoveries are being made. In 1855, discoveries of the ancient classical materials were found. 70 to 80% of what you have by classical authors today, the great classics have been found since then. In 1875, Nodeka Ilosavarsky prepared the grammar and literature of the Mandeans of Iraq. Little did he know the significance that would have from the Latter-day Saints' standpoint. Tape 104 is involved in what then was prepared and initiated by him and those who followed him. In 1890, Petrie, one of the great fathers of archaeology, concentrated on the Fayum of Egypt, a huge basin west of the Nile. Here a great series of discoveries were made, layers of linen wrapped around mummies going back to 600 B.C. And in the linen were manuscripts of the classic philosophers, and that's where we begin to recover most of the classical material. in 1877, 100 years after the discovery of some of the very first documents, these were now being made in abundance. And then in 1977, 100 years after the discovery by Petrie, I talked to you earlier about great discoveries were made in the same place along the lower Nile, the Fayum. You should get real familiar with the Fayum. They're still digging there. They're still finding things there. And when they find something, those who are working with the journals will know it. The general public won't see anything about it, maybe 5 to 10 years. But those of us who get all of the journals, we know within a few weeks or months of the time the new discovery comes out, or by attending symposiums or brought up to date. In 1886, another book of Enoch was found in the Akhmim of Egypt, another source of many documents in the Egyptian area. And here they have found a number of things concerning Mary and Christ and some of the apostles, and an interesting book concerning Jesus Christ, now available in English. Two very famous men were active about 1891. Wallace Budge, one of those, was famous for helping break the hieroglyphics of Egypt and prepare an Egyptian grammar and dictionary, and Friedrich Kenyon, one of the great archaeologists. They traveled all over Egypt, and they found a tremendous amount of papyri, and this began to stimulate individuals to deal in that kind of material whenever it was found. Nearly 100 years ago, clandestine individuals trafficked in ancient papyri, dealers who would buy secretly and slyly because of the antiquities law became available, and they still exist today. In 1892, Wallace Budge went on 18 buying missions to bring back new discoveries that were being made. One of the great discoveries was made in 1945 at Nag Hammadi, the subject of several tapes, number 54, 79, and others that will prepare in the future. In 1892, Grenville and Hunt, now these were explorers after my own heart, they went to dig every place and dig any place as far as that matter goes, and off they went to Oxyrhynchus, another place in Egypt. Now, why should they go to Oxyrhynchus? Well, the old story here again, there was a monastery. And a monastery, why not a library? The question was that this was a big one. There had been at one time 12,000 nuns and 10,000 monks. Where was their library? That's what they wanted to find. And they found part of the library. It was tremendous. Lost sayings of Christ and another gospel, not in our New Testament, translated by the British Museum in 1933. And a whole series of startling changes in documents dealing with the New Testament and are incorporated in that discovery. The same year, Wallace Budge was back in Cairo again buying some more papyri, and then he made discoveries of old material. A year later, Grenville and Hunt go back to the Fayum, where everybody was digging up material because it was so dry, and in the rubbish heaps they would find again stuffed crocodiles. Inside were parts of papyri and documents. So everybody began looking for crocodiles. In 1896, a man by the name of Serge joins Grenville in Egypt, and they make many discoveries again at Oxyrhynchus and the area of the old monastery. In 1897, a number of New Testament materials are again found at Oxyrhynchus dating from 200 A.D. Now we begin to get material close to that first vital century. So now we have material from at least several different discoveries that thrust us back into that first, second, and third century. In 1903, more texts are found by Hunt and Grenville. Where? Sure enough, Oxyrhynchus again. And they're still digging there today. Other people are involved, of course, constantly, and things will come to light as we go along. They're still finding material. About this same time, at the turn of the century, 1896, there were two elder ladies, Mrs. Lewis and Mrs. Gibson, who just loved to travel out to foreign places and buy things. And they had a very good friend who was one of the experts in ancient documents. His name was Solomon Schechter in England. He was a Jew of great renown and scholarly ability, and lived in London. And every time they'd go someplace, they'd buy this or buy that and take it back to him. But on this one occasion, they got into Cairo, picked up some documents, and when they tried to get out of Palestine with those documents, a little Jewish boy who was taking care of them and everything, he had to help them get through customs. He pretended that some of the documents had to do with some of their phylacteries that the Jews needed to have when they go any place, and he got them through customs all right. Well, when they showed up in England and gave the documents to Solomon Schechter, he recognized them as very important. so important that he left London to go to Cairo to find their source. It took him a considerable amount of time. The documents had come from a synagogue in Cairo called the Cairo Genza. This will be the subject of a future tape. The Cairo Genza is a vault in the synagogue that is used to place the ancient documents because the sacred name of God is written upon them and cannot be destroyed. So they're simply buried or vaulted up someplace and stored. He was able to get into this vault and able to bring back from that vault 250,000 documents. He later died from the diseases contracted from the dust of these ancient documents. His documents are still being photographed and studied. And just several years ago, Dr. Falk of the Hebrew University, an attorney, went to London to do research. He's in charge of the law area of the Hebrew University in Palestine. And when going through the Aramaic documents, he was looking for legal documents, he found a Jewish tradition of the life of Christ. But we'll tell you about that in a future tape. A whole Jewish tradition concerning Christ, a most unusual prophetic fulfillment published now in the Tarbitz Jewish Journal in Jerusalem. Then in 1908, there was a discovery of the K-1000 Buddhas, the subject of tape 102. In 1914, in Kansu, 500 scrolls were found. This is in China. There weren't even a catalog available of these until 1957. And following the discovery of the K-1000 Buddhas, where Ariel Stein had removed 25,000 scrolls, another 10,000 scrolls were brought out into Peking and Tokyo clandestinely. It took 7 huge wagons to take out the 25,000 scrolls that Ariel Stein had found. In 1913, there was a Coptic fragment found of interest to individuals who will know and understand 3rd Nephi. It confirms the 3rd Nephi portion of the Book of Mormon almost verbatim. In 1904, again at Oxyrhynchus, the sayings of Christ not found in the New Testament were found in fragments, parts of what we call today the Gospel of Thomas. Then in 1906, Gospels were found from the 5th century, about 400 A.D. In 1930, German and Russia, French and Japanese archaeologists in an area 90 miles north of the K-1000 Buddhas in Turfan, China, found the Manichaean texts. Mani was an individual who was a self-proclaimed apostle. He was born 216 A.D. He tried to restore to Christianity some of the teachings of the preexistence, which is denied by all 725 Christian churches today. Preexistence, a mother in heaven, doctrines of the nature and character of endowments given to Adam and Eve, and the role of individuals in terms of having a linear existence, going from progress to progress, and the possibilities of becoming gods, were his teachings. He was martyred for trying to restore these teachings. We will prepare a tape on Mani at some future date. The Mani material is not yet even available in full translation. The oldest book in the world, found in Algeria, and takes about 40 pages in German just to translate the document. Some was very vital in the confirmation of the discoveries and the antiquity of the scrolls found along the Dead Sea, today called the Dead Sea Scrolls. Not long after, some additional discoveries called the Nash Papyri were found, and they were absolutely essential for the dating of the Dead Sea Scrolls. They were in the possession of Dr. Albright. They were preparatory discoveries, all of these great discoveries that were being made, to others that would be made since 1945. And then in 1933, at Dura Europa at Odessa, at the Diatessaron, quite a bit of writing of the New Testament was found dating from 150 A.D. Then in 1935, fragments of an unknown gospel were found by Bell and Skite, and 3,000 more pages of the Manichaean material. And most of that, I can't even give you today English references. Then in Algeria, as we mentioned before, the oldest book was found. In 1938, additional Coptic material in Egypt was found. And in 1945, the Nag Hammadi discoveries and the Dead Sea Scroll discoveries were made in the same year. In 1956, discoveries were made near the ravines at Nag Hammadi of the Bodmer manuscripts, more Old and New Testament materials. A great deal of work is being done, and during 1981, symposiums are being held on the contents of these documents. In 1963, Lady Drower prepared a dictionary of the Mandean material contained in tape 104, and describes a great deal of material pertinent to Latter-day Saints and their understanding of the temple endowment. Her material is now available in at least 5 books in English. In 1968, the initial discoveries of Ebla were made. Today, 42,000 tablets are being cataloged, photographed, and prepared for translation. We mentioned the discovery and recovery and the contents in tape 100. We can only just tell you briefly about these discoveries. The purpose is to alert you to what is being discovered and what is out there and what will be coming forth as translators work with the documents. In 1969, Dr. Forrester visited the Mandean area and began to work on new translations. Then, in 1972, after almost a period of 60 years, 100 documents of the Sutta Pigatha have now been collated and assembled. In 1913, there were only about 12 or 13 of these books. Today, these books, dating between 200 B.C. and 200 A.D., during that 400-year period, the subject of tape number 97, are being studied by more than 500 men. 50 books are being assembled for publication by Duke University. The Latter-day Saints will find tremendous confirmation of doctrine and understanding of ancient things in these documents. In 1972, which was a tremendous era, we had additional discoveries, which are recorded in tape 82 and 90 and tape 116. Tabulations of the discoveries of Mesoamerican Mexican codices were being made. In France, nearly 200 codices from Mexican Central America were being recovered. It takes an entire whole volume now just to list and catalog the discoveries being made in foreign museums and being recovered by those sent back by the conquistadores. What's underlying these discoveries is, again, contributions to the confirmation of Book of Mormon. So many discoveries have been made of Book of Mormon materials that it'll take 30 hours to discuss in them in detail. We could list for you at least 50 major discoveries from Central and South America and 27 other discoveries made in Palestine and in Egypt. And we still would only be giving you a summary. There's been over 100 major discoveries that have been made in the last 30 years. Some of these with as many as 100,000 manuscripts. Be alert then that something fabulous is happening in our century, in our decade, in terms of monumental documentary discoveries, their contents being slowly brought forth in translation. Mostly now it's a busy activity of cataloging, identifying, collating. In the Cave of 1,000 Buddhas, for example, where 25,000 documents came initially and 10,000 more later, there's at least 9 languages represented. I have only 2 translations of Sogdian material, and it's startling. Some of it's almost like the 89th Section of Doctrine and Covenants that you're familiar with. Some of it is rather vital and important in information concerning the work of Hermes' New Testament material, and so a lot of material is coming gradually and slowly. In the case of the Nag Hammadi, it will take 50 men working for years to produce 16 commentaries in order to understand the English translation they produced 2 years ago in 1979 and 80. The first of these 16 commentaries is now available. Now, I think the second one is just about ready to be brought forth, and others, of course, will come along steadily. Let's mention a few other discoveries. In 1900, Sir Ariel Arthas Evans discovered in the Palace of Gnosis a treasure discovery. They're still doing excavations in that region, and you'll probably have noticed some recent discoveries of great treasures. There were over 4,000 tablets from 500 B.C. in these discoveries, and it has taken many years to be able to decipher what they call the Minoan Linear B scripts. This altered the whole picture of ancient Near Eastern civilization in our understanding of it and the patriarchs of Israel and the contact with other speaking groups around them. In 1939, 600 tablets were found in the archive in Pylos in Mesopotamia. And then again in 1952, other discoveries of the same kind were found and work resumed after World War II. These were the same kind of writings as the earlier discoveries made in 1900 and show that the Greek, whose language is often surprisingly close to our own, was busy in the Near East as early as the times of the patriarchs. History is changing history is being rewritten. In 1946, at Kara Tepe, there were discoveries made in Phoenician and Hittite, telling how people migrated and found cities a century before Lehi. Those of you who might be familiar with the Book of Mormon would be interested in such things. In Constantinople, in the year 356, Emperor Constantine founded an imperial library. A vast number of manuscripts have been able to be recovered, which were distributed from there during conquest periods into Europe. The city had become a very ancient patriarchal library. It has one today. And there are many monastic libraries which are very important. These are being cataloged and photographed. Two independent discoveries, one being made in 1872, of material going back to 140 A.D., of early Christian park material has been made from these. Then in a place called Biohaski, in 1906, a man by the name of Winkler excavated and found 10,000 cuneiform tablets going back to the 14th century B.C., a language related to our own. Scholars have formally maintained that the Hittite, with whom Abraham had intimate dealings with in the Old Testament, were really omitted and that they never existed. Now 10,000 tablets changed the course of history again. In 1935-36, a man by the name of Starkey discovered the first of the Lachish letters. And recently, a whole new series of discoveries of Lachish have been found, and Stark himself is very important in working with some of the caves of Qumran. In cave number 4, for example, there were 10,000 identifiable documents. In fact, it was found by the Bedouins and excavated, and in one sale alone, over 1,400 pounds of documents were clandestinely put up for sale. We haven't even got them all cataloged yet, and of the entire Dead Sea Scroll library, which is a vast library, only about 5% has been translated in 30 years. At any rate, at Lachish, it was very important. Now, I gave a special study on the Lachish letters and the Babylonian chronicles that were discovered in Babylon and other materials confirming the first chapter of 1 Nephi of the Book of Mormon. This was an exciting thing for me to undertake more than 20 years ago. Then in Gaza, near ancient Memphis in Egypt, pyramid texts were discovered, cut into the walls of tombs going back to 220 B.C., probably even as much as 2600 B.C., It covers 1,000 pages when it's prepared and written up. Very valuable material, especially if you're interested in what the Egyptians did in their ancient temples. Dr. Hugh Nibley has prepared a text called The Message of the Joseph Smith Papyri, using extensive material from this and other Egyptian sources to confirm the Pearl Gate Prize and the Mormon Temple Endowment. Now in Tel Amarna, in 1887, there were 200 cuneiform tablets found, which were dug up by peasants. And then an additional group were found. Another 358 tablets were found dealing with an archaic language going back to about 1400 B.C. during the time of Israel's wanderings in the area. So a great deal of Israel's early history and their predecessors is now being recaptured from these discoveries. At Hierapolis, which is the capital of ancient Egypt in the early days, in 1898, a whole collection of pre-dynastic discoveries were made containing ancient ritual and historical texts. And then just across the river in 1878, Marietta discovered the remains of a royal library and a building. Some of the documents are similar to those we reproduce in the Pearl Great Prize. And one of the most important commentaries to the Book of Mormon ever found anywhere was found in the Jewish colony on the Nile River in an island called Elephantine. The Elephantine Archives, subject of tape 103 and 112 by my son Ty, are very important contributions to the Book of Mormon names. A Jewish colony that came out of Jerusalem under the same pressure about the same time as Lehi, building a temple with about the same name. They worshiped the same God in the same way. And many of the names in the Book of Mormon are found in the archives of Elephantine. Where did Joseph Smith conjure up such names? You'll probably want to refer to tapes 103 and 112 for detail. 12 different specialists today in the world, knowing that we have stolen the thunder of these great discoveries, have actually provided parallels to their own areas of study and Book of Mormon and other Mormon doctrinal areas. They're still perplexed, and they can simply say at times, where did Joseph Smith get it? We have an answer. Isn't there a divine source that's got it all? Isn't there a perfect library? the whole library, everything ever written by anybody at any time, anywhere. Isn't it all there? There's an archive of supreme completeness, and it seems like there's a busy group of people always silent note-taking. If we accept the books of Enoch now being recovered in Ethiopia and in areas of the Ukraine and Russia, in Hungary, the Bogomil documents, and in Egypt and among the Dead Sea Scrolls, we understand that there's a very thorough, ongoing record-keeping by angels. Now at Nineveh, the third capital of Assyria, in 1851, a man by the name of Layard discovered a huge library at Ashurbanipal from the 18th century B.C. The library of Ashurbanipal was one of the great ones. Here was found an original version of the flood story. There was a man by the name of Smith who was involved in the tabulation, cataloging some of the documents. He found a broken fragment. He was involved in the cuneiform interpretation, recognized what seems to be a flood story, but there was a missing part of the cuneiform tablet. Inquisitive by nature, he went to the area of excavations, a long trip in those days, and as fabulous event would transpire, he found the missing part of the fragment. And the conclusion by the scholarly world at that time is that Genesis had copied from this document. But then with the discovery of Eblep, almost 800 years older, with another tablet referring to the flood and some parts of the flood story, again it became quite evident that there were older forms. The book of Genesis goes back older than any of these cities and sources material. They keep changing things as time goes on, as you can see. In Sippur, there was a large temple library discovered by Ronson in 1879. The original texts were important in constructing the overall picture of the Eastern religions and the paternism, in particular reconstructing the time of Abraham and later on periods that followed. A man by the name of Hillcrick discovered a library of thousands of documents in 1889. Including even a flood story older than the one Smith had found and helping to establish the sequence. The Bible is being vindicated quite a great deal by archaeology as an authentic source of history and geography, and the Book of Mormon and the Prograde Price and the Doctrine and Covenants likewise in the light of the new discoveries are being confirmed similarly, if not specifically. A man by the name of Herog in 1935 discovered a palace archive at a place called Mari. It had been destroyed by Hammurabi in the 18th century. Thousands of tablets were found, including correspondence with the kings of many of the cities, depicting in great fullness travels and activities of important men in the days of Abraham and centuries following, and vindicating the biblical portrait of the patriarchs. But just like the problems in Syria and elsewhere, there's a difficulty sometime. There's a problem with the Ebla materials. The subject of a tape that we mentioned earlier, where individuals are politically sometimes prohibited from early or detailed translations. But things will be worked out in many of the areas of these kinds of discoveries. Now let's refer to some additional discoveries so that you'll have an understanding of the nature and character of the evidence upon which geologists, archaeologists, and others interpret the data. Now archaeology involves all sciences, from computer to geology, from geophysics to geochemists. We know from clay ceilings that papyri was used in the Aegean, in the Minoan and Mycenaean period, and in Lower Mesopotamia and in the Seleucid period. And while we know this, we've recovered none. The kings of Israel and Judah erected stone stela, similar to the Mesha stone, but only one fragment of an Israelite stela containing a single word has ever been discovered. And this was from Samaria. It was published in 1936. We've already mentioned the fact that there were hundreds of synagogues in Palestine. Recently, in Masada, a synagogue was discovered, it being one of the very few ever found predating 70 AD. Only a fraction of the available sites in many countries have been surveyed. According to Samuel, there are 300 Mycenaean sites known. If all Greece were carefully explored for evidence, there may be 1,200 such sites. Iraq, which comprises most of ancient Mesopotamia, is dotted with the ruins of ancient cities, Edward Chiria declared that he could not find a place in the land of Iraq except in the newly formed delta from which one could not see two or three mounds. Yet Robert Adams reported recently, even the best maps of Iraq record only a minute and capricious fraction of the ancient mounds, which particularly in its southern plains seem to be covered almost continuously. In 1944, the Palestinian Gazette listed a total of about 3,000 cities in the Jordanian area, the area west of Jordan River, and several hundred in Transjordan. By 1963, the total of known sites had been increased to 5,000, largely as a result of the surveys of a man called Nielsen Glück. In 1966-67, surveys by Beno Rothenberg in the Negev and in the Arabah area turned up more than 200 additional sites. Rothenberg's survey of Sinai in 1968 discovered more than 100 previously recorded sites. As I drove through the Jordan area and up and down and back and forth across Egypt and Israel in 1980, many of these were quite apparent, the tells stretching into the distance one after another. The Israeli survey of 1967 and 68 in the occupied Golan Heights, Samaria, and Judah have substantially increased this total. Yes, surveys go on even though there's a war. In fact, they surveyed 1,200 sites, of which only 20 to 30% had ever been previously recorded. He says, Dr. Moshe Koshevi, I estimate that not more than one-third of the amount of possible sites have ever been recorded, and a thorough survey is a question of many years, including the yet unsurveyed of pre-war Israel. All told, close to 2,000 sites were examined by the Israeli teams. 800 were previously unknown. In the third place, if we want to talk about the nature and character of the fractions being discovered, surveyed sites have been excavated in very infrequent areas and quantities. In 1963, Paul Lapp estimated that of the 5,000 sites in Palestine, they've excavated 150. And only 26 of these were major in character. He went on to say, to be sure, many of the sites on record may not merit extensive excavation, but if only one in four were promising, major excavations have to now been carried out in only 2% of the potential sites. Of the recorded sites in Mesoamerica and Central America and South America, of which there are in excess of 8,000, less than 5% have been partially excavated, and very few totally excavated. Seton Lloyd notes that by 1949, more than 5,000 mounds had been located in Iraq, and as of 1962, Beck's Atlas recorded 28 major excavations were in progress. That's not very many, less than 1% of the total sites. From soundings made at Hazar in Palestine in 1928, Garstang concluded that the site was not an important city in the 14th and 13th century. Yet Yadin, one of the generals of Israel, the chief of staff during the War of the Independence, in a recent excavation found floors littered with Mycenaean pottery. The site of Hazar comprises a city of 30 acres and a lower city of 175 acres. Working with an unusually large staff and over 30 archaeologists and a crew of over 100 men, Yadin managed to clear 1/400th of the site in 4 years. He has suggested that it will take 800 years of about 4 or 5 months of work to excavate the entire site. Nippur was the earliest site to be excavated by the Americans in 1889 over in Mesopotamia. To a large extent, the Sumerian texts from Nippur recovered by the early expeditions have been published, but many have not. 1948 Nippur and the Kultepe in eastern Turkey, 16,000 cuneiform texts were found. Of these texts, only 2,000 have been published. The main body of texts excavated by the Turkish Historical Society since 1948 are very few. Of the 25,000 cuneiform documents found at Mare, 2,800 have now been published. Of the Assyrian letters found at Nineveh, 2,000 are still unpublished. In the British Museum, the main bulk of the tablets excavated by the University of Chicago up to 1936 remain unpublished. Many of the texts found at Adab up to 1904 are unpublished. as are many texts from Babylon. Of the total of 500,000 cuneiform documents thus far recovered, 10% have been published. Among the Dead Sea Scroll, you have tens of thousands of documents. Cairo Ginza, 250,000. The great amount of discoveries being made worldwide is certainly an avalanche. And as we read them, we're startled by something rather interesting. They seem to contain information confirming that the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints is what it purports to be, a restored church. Doctrines and organizational practices of the Church of Jesus Christ are now being found in these ancient documents. What might we conclude from all of this? It would seem that there's a period of preparation now following the Great Dispensation in which documentary evidences will come forth. They'll be testified of. Revelations will be given. New things will come forth in due time. The world of scholars and scholarship are being prepared by translating documents which have peculiar semantics of Mormon doctrine, Mormon literature. It sort of indicates to me, as I revel in all of these great discoveries, that the scholarly world, in a sense, is being prepared for substantially greater discoveries yet to be made, which will confirm that Jesus is the Christ, see page 25 of the Book of Mormon, and that great things will come forth which will confirm the Book of Mormon. We believe the Church of Jesus Christ to be true, but now we have much confirming evidence to be able to support his historical background, doctrinal integrity, and his organizational practices. But it's just still nice to know. A person still has to get on his knees and somewhere in private pray unto the Lord for a confirming spirit of the true religious intensity, doctrine, and beliefs of the Church. May all of you somehow or another find encouragement in what we've talked about and not being overwhelmed, and that you might dig deeply, apply the seat of the pants to the seat of the chair, and learn, gain knowledge, and get a testimony of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. In Christ's name, amen.